Welcome and thank you all for standing by. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. This call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this point. Now, I will turn the meeting over to Mr. Michael Simon. You may begin.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today in our latest in a series of industry webinars on the status of the consolidated audit trail. As you can see from the table of contents, we will be giving a brief update on the overall status of the project, and then we'll focus on how recent events will affect industry participants. At the end, we'll take questions. Please submit them through the Q&A box on the webinar for discussion at the end. We'll try to answer as many questions as we can in the time permitted, but there are areas that we cannot discuss, such as certain contractual, legal, and regulatory issues. So to start, as we've announced, we are in transition from thesis to a new plan processor. We are not yet in a position to announce a new plan processor, and I'm not being coy. There are a number of procedural boxes that we must check before we can make that announcement, and nothing is official until the operating committee votes on a new processor. That has not yet happened. We hope to be able to announce a new processor in the very near term. I emphasize that the proposed timelines that we will be discussing today factor into them the need to formally approve the new processor, and we do not expect any change at all in these timelines due to our need to follow the processor selection process in the rule and in the plan. In the interim, Thesis remains the plan processor and is providing services to ensure a smooth transaction. Thesis has been extremely cooperative in this process, and we're thankful to them for that. As we will discuss, the transition plan retains the current technical specifications for both participants and industry members. The last bullet says that the timelines are subject to approval by the SEC. It's probably more accurate to say that the timelines are subject to SEC objections. The SEC has not formally approved any variances from the original timelines, and we are not expecting them to do so in the future. But we are in continuous communications with the Commission staff on these dates, and we have previewed what you will see here today with them. We will update these timelines as appropriate based on staff feedback. And now I'll hand it over to Alex Ravenel of Deloitte to begin the discussion of the impact of the transition on industry members.
Great. Thanks, Mike. As Mike said, I want to spend a few minutes talking about the impact of the transition to industry members. We're going to go into more detail on most of these items here in just a little bit. But at a high level, I want to touch on a couple of points here. First and foremost, the participants have made the decision to keep the IM tech specs in their current form, and the successor plan processor will be using those specs as the existing design going forward. The participants are not intending to move to any other format. That includes moving to an OATS or an OATS-like format. A lot of work has gone into the specs as they are right now. On the industry side in particular, they've come a long way. We're planning to stick with that, so folks should keep developing against those specs. The second point I want to make is that industry member testing is still going to begin in 2019, and the first production date will be April 2020, and we'll talk more about those dates here in just a few minutes. That does mean, as I said, industry members should continue to move forward with their development activities because there will still be material activity and material reporting happening in 2019. The last point I want to make is that CADMS LLC is continuing to move forward to address interpretive issues and to communicate those decisions through the FAQs. This is the same process we've been using to date. That interpretive process is not going to stop. It is full speed ahead. That does, of course, mean that some of those interpretive issues may end up having flow-through impact to the specs. Specs are living documents. Just because we are keeping these specs in their current form does not mean they will, of course, never change. There will be business as usual changes that have to go into those specs, particularly to address any of these interpretive issues that might come out. So at this point, I want to spend a little more time talking about those industry member tech specs. I'm going to hand it over to Shelley for you to walk us through the specs.
Great. Thanks, Alex. So as Alex just mentioned, there will be no material design changes to the industry member tech specs as they've been previously approved by the operating committee and were published in October of last year. So the fundamental design, the message types, all of that as it exists today, there are no changes planned for that. So industry members should continue forth in their development efforts that they've already started in that design as laid out. The also as mentioned already, the successor plan processor will be required to support those specifications. So any successor processor coming in is fully aware they are required to use and provide a solution around those specifications. A very important point we want to make today is that any successor processor is going to be required to include error correction, error feedback, and correction mechanisms in their solution that are adequate to support the timeframes required for industry member error corrections, that T+3 at 8 a.m. And those mechanisms have to include both UI and machine-to-machine feedback and error correction tools. And the successor plan processor will be expected to work with industry members to solicit feedback and ensure that the tools are provided are adequate to meet the needs of industry members. So we understand that's very important for the industry, and it is very much part of what is being required of the successor processor. So we can move on to the next slide. So a preview here of what the plan participants are planning to do in terms of additional iterations of the IM tech specs and getting to a final specification to support the new timeframes. So the first thing that you'll see happen is later this week, this specification that's currently published will be republished just to reflect the transition from Thesis CAT, and it will just be a relabeling, so to speak, under the CAT NMS LLC name. So nothing material or substantive at all in that change, just to show that there is a change in processor, that these are the specs, will continue to be the specs that everyone needs to be working towards. Then we're planning to publish another version, a draft of the next, which will be version 1.1, on the 28th to reflect all of the industry feedback that's already been received since we published the October version. No material structural changes at all, but these are things like additional special handling codes that were identified, wording changes that are needed to clarify concepts, a few things that just needed to be corrected to correct errors. Those are the kinds of things that you'll see there. Then the next big event will be on 3/29, when we'll be publishing the second draft version that will have the new section 6 and 7. These are the sections of the spec that include the submission, feedback, and error correction portions of the specification. And that's where all the work that we're going to be doing with the successor processor in the interim will be reflected there. And then finally, April 29th will be the final specification that includes all of the error correction and connectivity sections as well. So that's sort of the time frame to get us to the final specification. All right, so if we can move on to the next slide. So how does this, of course, the big question everyone is waiting for is, what does this mean for the implementation date? So CAT NMS has developed an implementation timeline in the presence of this transition with several objectives in mind. The first is that the implementation of phase two proceed in as timely manner as possible. Another very, very important factor is that the successor plan processor has adequate time to complete its development and testing before anything can be rolled out to the industry. So that's a key factor. And in developing around that, we also were very cognizant of a new rollout process that we introduced would attempt to address industry concerns that have been raised about the challenges of there's a lot happening here, even with the phasing we did to A, to B, to C, et cetera, there's still a lot of functionality in there, a lot of linkage functionality, corrections of linkages that are very new. So we heard the challenges about doing all of that concurrently and what can we do to better address that or help that process as it moves forward. So the resulting implementation plan that we're about to talk through, which will include the submission of all data, which includes all of the required linkage keys being present, will begin in April 2020. But the different validations that occur, data integrity, linkage validations, et cetera, will occur incrementally in different sub-phases, so to speak. And that will start with the data integrity checks, and then various linkage validations will be enabled as we move forward in time. I will say at today we are going to be talking about 2A and 2B exclusively. Those are the most immediate releases where everyone's attention needs to be focused. We will be talking about dates and implementation timeframes for 2C, D, customer account, and small broker dealers in the very near future, but we are not talking about those dates in today's presentation. We are talking only about the 2A, 2B in an effort to keep everyone focused on the immediate tasks at hand. And to note that, as you're going to see in the next couple of slides, given the elongated implementation plan for phase 2A and how we're going to be incrementally introducing various validations, we do not believe a regulatory conformance period is necessary any longer, as we had previously included, given that we had this, a simple 3-month test period before we were going. That, as you'll see, is not very longer, so we don't believe it's appropriate to have this regulatory conformance period. All right, so if we can move to the next slide, where we're going to dive into the meat of this. So I know there's a lot on this page, but at a high level, the general idea here is that we will start rolling out with file submission and data integrity validations only. Then, and I'll walk through these each in a little more detail, but I want to lay it out at a high level as we get started. Start with data validations, then move to intra-firm linkages. So once you can get all your data accepted, now can you link all your data inside your own firm? Because there's new intra-firm records, event types that have not historically been there in OATS. So there's a period of time dedicated to that. Then once everyone can get all their data accepted, can link inside their own firm, then we'll start enabling the validations to go industry member to industry member, inter-firm linkages. And then finally, we'll add at the very end exchange and TRF linkages. Those have historically, anyway, in the OATS context, had the highest compliance rates of almost any of the requirements in OATS, and we feel the industry has a very good grasp on that. So that's towards the end. So laying that out, let's go back and walk just a little bit more in detail about what specifically happens when. So we'll start with the very first iteration of phase two, which is the file submission and data integrity. And what this means is validations in this first phase will be only those types of validations that would result in a record being rejected. So invalid format, invalid symbol, things like that, where the record gets rejected, it has to be repaired and resubmitted. We will be opening the test environment for that in December of 2019, with the plan for it to be live in production in April of 2020. So during that test period, what will have every CAT reporter that has a reporting obligation beginning in phase 2A will have to have successfully submitted a file and passed all validations in test before they will be allowed to access production. That will be a key factor. Then what do we mean by production in April of 2020? What that means is that every industry member that has a reporting obligation in phase 2A will be required to submit all 2A reportable data every day by 8 a.m. on T+1, all of the data integrity validations, like I just explained, those that would result in the rejection of a record have to be corrected and resubmitted by 8 a.m. on T+3. That is all that happens in terms of validations in that April 2020 date timeframe. Then what happens concurrently with going to prod for that is in the test environment, the successor processor will enable the intra-firm linkage validation. They will turn those on. So firms will then start seeing if they're not able to link events inside their own firm. And the CATMS is still analyzing what the appropriate test requirements will be during that phase. And then that those requirements to link inside records inside your own firm will go into production in July of 2020. So that means that those validations get turned on in production, and any unlinked events that for intra-firm inside your own firm would have to be corrected by 8 a.m. on T+3. So remember in CAT, if you have an unlinked event inside your own firm, an execution where you don't have an order, et cetera, it does not result in a rejection in CAT. It results in an unlinked record. So that's those unlinked errors will be returned, and those corrections have to be made by 8 a.m. on T+3. Then the next tranche that will be then deployed to test is turning on the inter-firm or the IM-to-IM linkage validations. And so that has, and we understand that to really effectively be able to test that, we need coordinated industry testing. So the participants are analyzing and have will be developing specific plans to facilitate coordinated industry testing during this window. And then in October, those validations will be deployed to production, and any unlinked inter-firm will have to be corrected starting October 2020 by 8 a.m. on T+3. Then the very final tranche of this is the exchange in TRF linkages. It's very much like I've already discussed with the others here, again, coordinated industry testing involving the exchange data. The TRF data will be required. And this tranche, again, has the shortest window of tests because, as I said, our, you know, at least Fenner's experience in the OATS context is this is the area where the highest compliance rates occur. And so we would be rounding 2A out in October of 2020, full production of all required validations with all corrections having to be made by the 8 a.m. T+3 window. All right, so let's move on to the next slide for 2B. And this very much mirrors what happens in 2A. So I'm not going to go in detail through each of these here because it's very similar. What I would point out here is that the successor processor, we would be looking for them to develop concurrently the 2A, 2B functionality. So the 2B functionality will be rolled out in test concurrently with the 2A. However, the production go-live dates will be longer for 2B to recognize that this is very new, brand new for industry members, so they need additional time before being able to go to prod on the options front. You'll see the very last date for 2B full functionality is December of 2020. But the test dates start, like I said, with 2A, so it'll get a little bit longer test windows for options than you do for equities. All right, so let's move on to the next slide. I think that's at a high level. Like I said, we're not going to be talking about 2CD customer and account, large broker-dealers at this point. We'll be talking about those in a future date. The one thing we wanted to make sure we give a nod to that, and everyone is aware that this obviously will have impacts on the OATS retirement schedule, and that is currently under consideration by FINRA, who will have to make, you know, do their own analysis on what that retirement looks like. And as stated in FINRA's original retirement filing, you know, error rates will obviously be a key factor in determining what the time frames are for OATS retirement. Okay, so with that, I'm going to turn the presentation over, if we can go on to the next slide, to Paul McKinney. And he's going to pick up with, I believe, it's a clock sync update.
Great. Thanks, Shelley. Good afternoon, everybody. Yes, this next slide really is a reminder to the industry that it is clock synchronization certification time again. And it's a reminder that firms have to certify that their business clocks meet the requirements of the compliance rule by March 15th of 2019. It's also just a reminder that this is not a the certification form does not have to be submitted to any SRO. However, it does need to be retained on site at the firm for its books and records to show that the business clocks that they are using to record the date and time of any reportable event under SEC Rule 613 is in fact synchronized to the standards that are laid out here in kind of those third and fourth bullet points. Again, for electronic clocks, it is within 50 milliseconds of the time maintained by the National Institute of Standards and Technology. And then for those business clocks used solely to record manual order events, those have to be synchronized within 1 second of that same referenced clock. Another reminder is to firms that are using some kind of a third-party service bureau or clearing firm and relying on their clocks, they should also have an obligation, the firms using those clocks have an obligation to ensure that they are, in fact, certified and also need to complete the certification form. The certification form, we're in the process of updating it to include one of the new member exchanges, the IAX Emerald Exchange, and that is in the process of being posted to the catnmsplan.com website. And with that, we'll move on to the next slide, please. So the next slide discusses the CAT help desk. And as part of the plan processor transition that we've discussed here, the CAT help desk has been transitioned from Thesis CAT to the CAT NMS LLC. And then once the subsequent plan processor is named, it will transition over to that plan processor. So currently, any questions that folks have on the CAT, you know, really any types of questions on the CAT, should be directed to catnmsio@deloitte.com. And then those questions are being answered by the CAT NMS LLC. So please continue to send your questions there, and you know, we will certainly get answers back to you as soon as we can. The phone help desk services with a successor plan processor will be restored at a future date. So there certainly will be a way for you to contact the CAT help desk telephonically once that transition is complete. And then, as always, if you have or need additional information, including a copy of this presentation, it will be on the www.catnmsplan.com website, which continues to be the primary source of information related to the CAT. So with that, I will turn it over to Alex Ravenel, who's going to talk to you a little bit more about the website.
Great. Thanks, Paul. So I want to talk about a couple features of the website. I think most people are probably familiar with this at this point, but just in case, make sure we point these out. First is the technical specifications section. There is an entire specifications section on the website. It is linked to in the top nav bar of the website. As Shelley mentioned, there will be some updated versions coming out here in the very near future over the next, I think, two of them over the next week. So folks should make sure they are familiar with this. This is where folks will be able to go to get access to those specifications when they are posted. Next slide. Another feature I want to point out, the FAQs. One of the points we made earlier is that the interpretive process will continue on. As interpretive issues are resolved, that is generally going to result in an update to the FAQ. So there are running updates to the FAQs, usually a couple times a month, as interpretive items are resolved. The CAT FAQ section is where those items are posted. And then, of course, as Shelley mentioned, should any of those interpretive issues require updates to the specs, those will then flow into an updated version of the specs, whatever the next version that follows is. Next slide. And then the last feature I want to point out here, there is a website subscription function. You can put in your email address and subscribe, and then any updates to the website, such as updates to the specs or updates to the FAQs, you will get an email notification when that happens, and that way you can make sure that you are staying on top of any of the changes that are coming out as a result of these transitions. All right, so at this point, I think it's time for Q&A. Mike, you want to give us an introduction to the Q&A process here?
Sure. Alex, thank you very much. As I mentioned at the beginning, there is a box on the bottom right. Anybody who has any questions, we've received a few, which we'll start with. Anybody else who has any questions, please feel free to add them. First, we got a message saying that there were some linkage problems in getting into the webinar, and some people may have missed the first three slides. Well, there was a request for us to repeat them. Rather than that, please note that the session is being recorded, and the entire session and the webinar itself will be up on the CADNMS website. So anybody who missed any portion of it or is welcome to join to review it by going to the CADNMS website. So the first question that we have is, what mechanism will be put in place to coordinate industry-to-industry-member communications to correct linkage problems? Shelley, I'll turn that over to you.
So I think that that will be something that the successor processor will be expected to look at what options are there, what the in that whole industry feedback process, what is optimal, and will be part of that those discussions that will be occurring and as we move to that final specification and those error correction tools to see what is feasible and what needs to be there. So definitely we understand that's an important component, the participants.
Great, thank you. There are a couple of questions on clock sync. So for Paul, are firms required to request and retain as part of the books and records the attestation forms, or just to ensure that the submitter firms, the service bureaus, have an attestation form as part of the submitter's books and records?
Well, I think for that question, the firms are certifying that the clocks that they are using are, in fact, synchronized. So I think they need to have something at the firm that shows what they are basing that certification on. So if that's something that's provided by the service bureaus or an attestation or something like that, I think that would certainly meet that requirement.
Great. Follow-up question on clock sync. With regard to clock sync for manual order events, can you explain more on how firms should sync their clocks for these events? Would syncing an internal system used to systematize these events within the standards to verify it is within 1 second be sufficient?
There's a lot there. I think that if that process that they're using ensures that, excuse me, that the business clock that they're using to record those manual events is in fact synchronized, then that should work. I'm not sure I know enough about that process as it's laid out there in that question to say specifically, but they really just need to make sure that those business clocks are in fact synchronized to that one second for the manual order events.
Great, thanks. And back to Shelley. Will intra-firm testing and industry-member-to-industry-member testing leverage the data submitted in production starting April 2020?
So that's a great question. And first of all, I'd like to clarify that in that rollout we talked about that the linkage validations will not be run retroactively. So April, we go with data validation, data integrity checks, and then the intra-firm linkage gets turned on. It's not going to go back to April and all of a sudden give people a bunch of intra-firm linkages. It will start going forward with each release. That being said, I think that ideally we would want to be working, with the successor processor on this. Being able to have the advantage of having all of that data there and looking where there might be problems or help in the testing of those linkages, certainly something we'll be looking at.
Great, thank you. given that submission is required by T plus 1, 8 a.m., and all corrections must be made by T plus 3, 8 a.m., what requirements are being enforced on the new plan process of returning around feedback files to industry members for all stages of processing, in particular linkages?
So another good question, and those are details that we'll be working out with the new successor processor to ensure, and in conjunction with developing the error correction tools that will be set forth in the specifications, that understanding that the feedback has to be there in the most timely manner possible to give firms the full advantage of their T plus 1 to T plus 3 time frame. So obviously don't have those specifics right now, but we very much understand the importance of them, and that will be part of the discussion with the successor processor.
Thank you. There are a number of questions that ask about the plan processor selection process or make assumptions as to who the new plan processor is going to be. And as I stated at the outset, those are issues at this point that we really can't discuss. There are a number of other questions that are talking about when will specs and requirements be published in the future. I know Shelley said that those things are currently being worked on. The answer, I think, is as soon as we're comfortable with them, as soon as we've had discussions with the relevant working groups, the committees, and the commission staff, that we're comfortable publishing them. We understand the interest in the industry to get as much information as they can, and we commit to working as quickly as we can on those. I don't know if there's anything further you want to add on that, Shelley.
No, I think you stated it well.
Okay. Also, there's a question of why aren't we just moving to an OATS-based system? And I think you answered that as well, Shelley, in saying that these tech specs have been published. People have been working towards them for a number of months. There's a general consensus, at least on the SRO standpoint, that these are the best tech specs that are out there for moving forward, that we're not moving to an OATS system, that we're moving into a new era of reporting here. Again, Shelley, I don't know if there's anything further you want to add to that.
Yeah, exactly right. And a lot of work has, as you said, has gone into these new form of specifications from the industry itself. So we want to preserve all that good work that's been done.
Okay. How will the processor change impact the registration process? Firms are supposed to start registering within the next couple of months. That's our hope and expectation that within the next couple of months we'll have a new plan processor and that will continue smoothly. So I don't think it should impact the registration process at all. The question is, so when will the presentation be available on the CADNMS website? By the end of the week. Does the FDID need to be reported in April 2020 since there won't be a conformance period? I think the answer to that is yes, but I turn that over to Shelley.
Yes, no, that is correct. Yes, it will be required in April 2020.
Okay. There's a question that says the exchanges have already been submitting data to Thesis. Will all of this data be migrated to the new plan processor? And the answer to that is yes. Again, not going to answer questions specifically on the plan processor transition process that we're going through. And as per usual, we get a number of questions, which is there have been issues facing the project generally. Why are we comfortable or do we believe that a new processor will be able to move the project forward? All I can say is that from the CADNMS operating committee side and the SRO side, we work in good faith as best we can with the information that we have to move this project forward. The SROs and the industry are under a lot of pressure, regulatorily and otherwise, to have this project be successful. They're all committed to it, and we try to make the best decisions we can with the information we have at a given time. Shelley, when is the testing window starting? I think you said December of this year.
That's correct. December 2019, around mid-month, we will be, there was, I think, some questions about the specific dates we gave months and years here. We will be publishing those specific dates shortly, but I would anticipate a mid-month December 2019 start opening of the industry test environment.
A question is asking whether they'll, when will we name a new processor and when will a transition plan be in place? Again, we can't, as to the new processor, as soon as we check the necessary boxes, again, we want to do it as quickly as possible. And I'm not quite sure of the question on a transition plan. We're working with Thesis that's providing transition services when the new processor is in place. The new processor will pick up where Thesis left off. There's no real plan that's necessary, particularly for industry members who should just continue working in the manner in which they're working now. Question, will industry members be able to utilize OSO agreements and CATS similar to OATS reporting? Shelley, is that you?
Sure, I can take that one. So, yes, there absolutely is the ability in CAT to have a third-party report on your behalf, and there will be similar authentication and agreements and very similar structure to OATS. So the answer is yes.
Can you provide some examples of intra-firm linkage errors in the April 2020 part of Phase 2A? Not sure I understand that. Maybe you do, Shelley.
I think I do. So these would be any order events inside a single broker-dealer, like a new order accept that then is internally routed, so there's an internal route, or there's a child event. An execution, order fulfillment, all of that must be created and linked inside a single firm. So any of those that don't link, like an execution with no new order, et cetera, would be marked as unlinked, and that would be given back as a linkage error.
Right, thanks. Previously, Phase 2B was broken into two pieces with two different deadlines, simple electronic orders in May 2020 and manual outcry options and complex orders in May 2021. Is 2B no longer being rolled out under two different go-live dates?
Yes, it is. So before 2B was, or is, still is, simple electronic orders, and Phase 2D, which is a separate phase, is the manual orders and complex orders. So there still is a Phase 2D. There's still a Phase 2C and a Phase 2D. We just did not talk about it in this particular presentation today. Those have different dates associated with them, which will obviously be later than the 2A, 2B dates. But we are not, we will be sharing those at a date in the near future. But yes, absolutely, we still have the two different phases, and the manual and complex comes at a later date after the simple electronic option orders in 2B.
Great, thanks. And to give you a break, Shelley, a question for Paul. How should time sync errors be repaired?
Timestamp errors, that is currently being looked at as to how those would be reflected back to the broker-dealers, and we do anticipate that there will be more information on that when the error codes and reject reasons are published in the March version of the tech specs.
And Shelley, will you mentioned the version 1.1 of the industry member tech specs, the plan to be released on 329. Will they have plan processor connectivity details?
Those will be there by the, for sure by the April 29th. I think the plan is on the March date, but we'll provide, I'll get back and make sure that I am not speaking out of turn on which version that the connectivity details will be in. We'll be providing a lot, just to, safe to say, we're going to be providing a lot more detailed information in the very near future as we develop it. So some of these details we're still working out, but we'll be providing a lot more detail and transparency in the very near future.
Right. And Shelley, you mentioned that the test environment would, the December date, There's a question, when can members, industry members, begin sending data? Is that the earliest that they'll be able to, mid-December?
That's correct, yes.
Is a T+3 date based on submission date or original error date? There's an example given. I don't know if that's a sufficient question, or you want me to go through the example as well.
I think it will be, if I understand the question, based on the date that you, so if you submit your record late, if you still, like if you submit on T+2, if you're still required to submit by T+3, I believe is what the question is. And I would like to, we'll take that back, that I think that's something that we need to publish information on that I'm not sure we have, so I would defer to answering that at this time.
A question on as to what date in April 2020 we go live, whether it's the 30th. I don't think we've picked a specific date yet, have we?
Correct. It'll be towards the end of the month, but again, we'll be providing a lot more specific information in the very near future that would then have all of these specific dates.
A question is, when will the cost and funding for CAT be determined? And we couldn't go through one of these webinars without that question. And the answer is that the SROs have withdrawn their fee filings. They will need to resubmit them. That has not been actively worked on as we've gone through the transition process. I think we really need to get a new processor chosen, understand what the cost structure will be there, and then go back and revisit it. But again, any fee filing that would impact the industry members will be published by the commission, filed by the SROs, and published by the commission for comment. I would not expect that in the near term. Well, so next question, what is the timeline to get additional connectivity information for test as well as production environments?
I believe that's going to be in the April timeframe, if that's the question. The April 29th final spec, looking back at slide 6, that is where we're planning to provide the all of the connectivity information in the April 29th final version.
Okay. The question is are the options reporting really date really not being moved? Is go live 1 month after equities?
It's I believe it's the go live for equities is October 2020. And the go-live for options is December 2020. So I think that's 2 months.
Regarding the first phase 2A in April 2020 implementation, where file submission and data integrity tests will be performed, will this include if events are missed within the submission for that firm?
So it would, if it were missed, only... No, because this is only data integrity that would result in the rejection of a record. So the missed record, like a missed new order, if I'm understanding the question correctly, or some missing subsequent event, that would be in a CAT context flagged as an unlinked event. It wouldn't be a rejection. So I hope I understood that question correctly.
For the December 2019 start of testing, will that be a mandatory start testing date for all industry members? I believe it's just for the large industry members. Is that correct, Shelley?
Correct.
Okay. There's been another question regarding fees and costs, asking if there's been a formal accounting of costs up to date and who will be responsible for the excess costs incurred by the processor change. That's something that, again, the SROs will have to figure as they come up with a fee proposal and work closely with the commission staff. And again, anything that is proposed will be out for comment and will detail what costs are being recovered and will be subject to industry comment before it could be implemented. And next question. There have been some new handling codes introduced for certain types of activities, dividend buy-ins. Will there be any consideration for additional account type codes opposed to handling codes?
I believe the answer is no with respect to handling instructions, but the new spec, the new version of the spec that's coming out on 228 will reflect some feedback that we've received on account type, and particularly as it related to some options and making that consistent with equity. So I would please ask for people to wait to look at that 228 spec. And a lot of these very specific details, I think, are better addressed, you know, by in forms we'll have when we can talk in detail about the specific specifications, and a lot more of the information, detailed information on each of the implementation phases. We do plan to have absolutely additional industry forums where we can better address in much more detail as we develop and fill out some of the details ourselves.
I think that's an important point, Shelley, that we are planning to have some sort of roadshows or additional industry forums to get into this in more detail. Can you explain what will be included in the July 2020 intra-firm linkage with, by providing an example?
Sure. So the intra-firm linkage is, you know, broker A routes an order to broker B, and they're required to link. So broker A's route has to link to broker B's new order, and if it doesn't, there will be an unlinked event. So that's what would be in the IM to IM linkage beginning in July 2020.
When will the SRL plan participants start reporting to a new plan processor? The currently we anticipate that to happen around the end of March, beginning of April. Will the 329 industry member tech specs have the expected completion time for each stage of the file/data processing? And will the update of the specs in March include all the exception error codes?
So, yes, when we get to March and April, and I'm between the two of those, we will get, by the time we get to April, and some information coming in March, we'll get all the specific error codes, and you will get the time that you will expect to get your feedback delivered each day.
Okay, Shelley, you already spoke about the phase-out of OATS. There's a question if there's any update on that date. Is there anything further you can add to that?
No, not beyond what we said. FINRA is under consideration by FINRA.
Okay. Somebody asked whether this Q&A session will be added to the website, and the answer to that is yes. Both the deck and the audio version, the entire audio version, will be on the website. Question, will there be an SLA that says the new plan processor will be required to send the feedback files by at noon of T plus one? I know that we're in the midst of going over the new SLAs, but I don't know if anybody – any of the presenters have an answer to that?
Yeah, not a definitive answer at this time.
What's the difference between the April 2020 and October 2020 dates for equities?
So the April, maybe if we go back to that slide, would it be possible? I think it might help to have this in front of everybody while we're talking about it. If we could go back to the 2A slide. So in April of 2020, all data required to be reported, if you have a reporting obligation in 2A, then all data is required to be submitted every day. But the only validations that will be performed are those that would result in the rejection of an event, so data integrity, invalid format, invalid symbol, et cetera, no linkage validations. Then, as we have talked about incrementally, we'll go intra-firm validations, then inter-firm validations, and when we get to October, all required linkages will be in place, validations, feedback will be given, and all unlinked events have to be corrected. So the difference between April and October is simply the requirement to repair all unlinked events, which will not be there in April. No unlinked feedback will even be given in April. So this is one, I know that this, there's a lot of detail here, and we will be looking, as Mike mentioned, to have more roadshows, perhaps some in-person events, make ourselves more than available. And, you know, as we, once we get the successor processor in place, I mean, a lot of this is very important to be working with the processor themselves. So we will be, you know, diving much deeper into a lot of these details and more specific examples that we can get, the error correction, all of those SLAs. Today, we can't spurt the answers off today. Those are going to be in development as we get closer to those final specifications. I know it's very important information and people need it as quickly as possible, and we recognize that. So please stay tuned and be prepared to see announcements for these events as we plan them in the near future.
Okay, and also, since there's no conformance period in the current plan, should we consider that after the October 2020 date for equities phase one, that there could be fines for misreporting, but not before then? And I guess by fines, that we should generalize that to be not necessarily fines, but potential regulatory actions.
That's right. So, and that gets phased in. So in April 2020, if you fail to report data that you're required to report, or you fail to correct rejected data, which is essentially not reporting it, by 8 a.m. on T+3, then you could be subject to some sort of regulatory inquiry, you know, whatever form that takes in those early days. And then we get to July, any intra-firm linkage problems, errors that you receive, if they are not corrected within the allowed time, then that could be a regulatory inquiry. Same thing when we get to October. If you're not doing your interfirm linkage corrections, then you're on the hook for it. And same with exchange and TRF. By the time we get to October, you're on the hook for that, but not prior to that for each of the incremental rollouts here.
We have a question regarding the NMS plan website, and ask if it will be revamped so that updates to the FAQs can be identified faster, noting that the website now is very bare bones and difficult to navigate. That's a really great point and good feedback. We will be transitioning the website to the new plan processor, and we'll be looking at ways to improve the website. So this is a great suggestion, and any other suggestions that people have, please let us know, and we'll see what we can do to make the website more user-friendly. Next question, does a broker-dealer have the option to report all required events for Phase 2 in October 2020 instead of in phases April, July, et cetera?
So if I understand the question correctly, the answer is no. All required data under 2A must be reported starting in April 2020. So all data every day, April 2020. The only difference between April and October is the linkage, the level of linkage validation and error correction requirements that are in place. But your full scope of reportable activity for 2A equity, it starts in April 2020.
Another couple of questions. One is asking us to go back to previous slides, and we're not going to do that, but again, by the end of the week, the entire presentation will be up on the website so that you can see it then and can come in with any questions you may have. Again, asking when we'll provide updates on later phases. The answer to that is as soon as possible. A question is, will there be potential regulatory action if somebody is not testing in December of 2019?
So I think the answer there is, as we've stated, the requirement for testing in that very first phase is that you have to have successfully submitted a file that passed all validations to test before you're allowed to access PROD. So if you cannot or you have not done that successfully or not even attempted it, you would not be allowed to start submitting data in April, and a failure to report data in April would be a potential regulatory issue. So while the failure, there's not a prescribed form of testing other than you must certify you must have been there and been able to successfully transmit, or you're not going to be able to submit to production like you're required to in April.
Okay, if a firm validated the CAT sync in 2017 as was required, are there any other changes that are necessary?
The clock sync certification is an annual process, so it is required that you annually certify that those business clocks are in fact synchronized.
Okay, if a firm was excluded from OATS but would otherwise meet the definition of a large industry member, when will that firm be required to start reporting, in phase 2A or phase 2C? So here you have a large industry member that was not subject to OATS reporting.
So all large industry members are required to start reporting in 2A.
Yep.
Yeah, there's no, the OATS reporting element is not relevant to whether you're large, to the report, it's whether you're a large or small broker-dealer. Small OATS reporters is another category where the participants have sought to accelerate those small firms to 2A to facilitate a faster OATS retirement, but all large broker-dealers, regardless of OATS status, are required to come in 2A.
Shelly, do you know if the new plan processor will be doing OATS to CAT validation as part of the new scope?
We do not know that.
Okay. Can somebody report 2A and 2B in April to simplify delivery?
So if I understand the question correctly, could 2B activity be reported to production in April? I think that we would want to take that question back to consider it.
Okay, FDIDs are optional until the end of the, in the earlier plan, FDIDs were optional until the end of the conformance period in February of 2020, at which time they become mandatory. When will FDIDs be mandatory as for the new plan? April, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
And another question on specific dates. When you say December 2019 and April 20 is the beginning or the end of the month, I believe, as you said, Shelley, for the testing, we're looking at some point in mid-December. In April 2020, we'll come out with an exact date, and we don't have that yet.
Exactly. But I think it would be towards the end of the month. It's not going to be like April 1st.
Yeah. Our vendors who will be doing CAT reporting for clients, do they have to be testing in 2019 for all clients, or can they just submit one file a day during the testing?
I think we'll take that question back, and I think we need to formulate a little bit more specific guidance around that December test period, and that's a very good question that we'll take back.
Great. Thank you. What is the obligation for a non-executing clearing firm?
So, if I understand the question correctly, if the clearing firm itself is deemed to have received an order and satisfies any of the prongs or criteria around what that, you know, receiving an order, then they would have a CAT reporting obligation. I think hopefully is what that question means. If you're simply clearing the transaction and you did not receive an order, then there would not be a CAT reporting obligation. But I would want the very specific facts and circumstances to make sure I understood the question correctly.
Another question, a couple of questions here. I'm not quite sure I understand, but I'll pose them and see if you can help. When will the FDID and handling instruction open items be resolved? I'm not quite sure what the open items are. Joe, you know what the reference is there?
I think what maybe being referred to there is there are some open interpretive questions on the FDID, some of them around hierarchy. We published quite a few FAQs on FDID that were questions raised about whether they had to be masked, et cetera. So there's a few that are remaining, and the hampering instructions. I think there's another interpretive issue about providing the specific exchange codes, et cetera. So those are all actively under consideration, as we mentioned earlier in the presentation, are being actively worked with a view of providing guidance in the very, you know, by the time the spec gets finalized.
Another question, and I'll just read it because and maybe it may you can understand it. The requirements for rep orders linkage for phase 2A, that is one-to-one linkage, stays or may change. Not quite sure I follow that, but maybe it makes more sense to you.
As I understand it, so we have the very specific phase 2A and 2C items that are currently in the spec, and we have a very specific definition of a one-for-one representative order that would be the requirement in 2A. So we are not planning to change any of those very detailed specific scope items within 2A and 2C. So I think the answer is it remains the same from where we were before.
That takes us to the end of the questions. We continue to get questions on a number of areas that we really can't discuss in any more detail on, specifically regarding the choice of a new plan process, so the timing and things like that. So those questions we will answer and get you the information as quickly as we can. So one last question we have here, and if any, this is your last chance. This is the last one we have in the queue. So if anybody has any questions, now is the time to ask them. When will the industry member and security master daily list be published?
So we don't have the specific date on that, but it will be early. There will probably be a test list published very early, and then, you know, we don't have the specific date yet of when the, like, prod files will start being published every day, but that information will be included in the, you know, very short term here when we roll out more of the details.
Well, so when will the March 31st addenda be published?
I'm not sure what that is referring to.
Nor am I. So again, anybody has any further questions, you can, you know, post them on the website, and we'll get back to you as quickly as we can. Is the issuance of industry member IDs, IMIDs, on hold until the new process is selected?
So the IMIDs are used, actually represent existing SRO assigned identifiers. So I don't think there were any being issued by the CAT, unless I'm misunderstanding the question.
Will the symbology file be different than the ones provided by FINRA today on start and end of day?
I think that one we need to wait for to answer until the successor processor is involved.
Great. Okay, that ends the questions that we have. I really thank the industry. We've had over 80 questions here, by far the most interactive presentation and webinar that we've had. Thank everybody for their attention, and today we will stay in touch with you. and scheduling more webinars and roadshows as we move forward. And we'll publish information on specificity regarding upcoming dates and a new plan processor as soon as we can. Again, thank you, everybody, and have a good day.
And that concludes today's conference. Thank you all for joining. You may now disconnect.